The Global Minimum Tax Pillar 2 Order 2024 Confirmation Bill 2025 received its principal stages reading at last week's sitting of the Legislative Council. While the bill's title is to say the least a little bureaucratic, it cements in Manx law an ability to bring in much needed tax revenue to Treasury while not impacting on the Isle of Man's competitiveness. Mover of the bill, Gary Cluett, MLC, joins me now in the studio. You introduced a piece of legislation. It had its principal stages read in the Legislative Council last week. Tell us about that bill.
Hi, Phil. Good to be here again. This bill is essentially a confirmation bill for what we call the OECD Pillar 2 framework. That's a bit of a mouthful. So the Isle of Man is signed up to the Organization of Economic Security, Cooperation and Development, which is the global organization of most countries. And they come up with these frameworks for various pieces of legislation. One of the first major pieces was Pillar 1. And what that was an attempt by the International Taxation Authorities to some extent to clamp down or at least get primarily U.S. tech companies to pay taxes in the various jurisdictions that they worked in. The U.S. obviously had something to say about that, and it's been somewhat difficult, and I'm not sure it's ever really been that effective. Pillar 2, on the other hand, was a slightly wider approach, whereby under Pillar 2, there is a global minimum tax so any company or group of companies whose consolidated financial accounts on a worldwide basis come to 750 million euros is subject to a minimum global tax of 15%. Okay. So it's not a compulsory, we don't have to sign up to this compulsorily. And the advantage of us signing up to it and implementing the legislation behind it is that, so if we didn't, and there are some jurisdictions for their own specific reasons haven't signed up fully, if we didn't, the corporations, some of those global enterprises that have offices here or assets here, would still pay the 15% on their global things, but they just wouldn't pay it here. So what this legislation does is the ability for us to essentially capture the 15% that is sort of domesticated onto the Isle of Man. So it's a very important piece of legislation for us financially. What happens is it was brought through in Tynwald last year. I think it was the 21st of November it passed Tynwald. But it was done through as a temporary Treasury order, which is how Treasury does budgets and a number of orders. The catch with that is that it expires within 12 months. So it has to be confirmed by a second reading it has to be read again in Keys, and then obviously it's come to LegCo. What we're doing is, instead of allowing it to expire, because the intent is that Treasury is currently working on a full-blown Pillar 2 bill, which will take the temporary taxation order, which we have now, and will turn it into law. So it'll primarily be based on the existing temporary taxation order, or TTO, and then with some amendments, because those international things change all the time. So it'll be amended, and it'll be presented in Keys, I guess, a bit later this year.
And of course, the reason it's done in this way, you do an order, mm-hmm. because an order is something that requires one vote in Tynwald,
yes.
and that's the finish of it.
Yes.
To bring it, to ensure that these things are done properly and that proper scrutiny is given, mm-hmm. The order mm-hmm. is given effect for usually for about 12
months. 12
months,
yes.
And then a bill has to come forward. And the reason the bill then comes forward is because there are two branches, obviously, that mm-hmm. look at it. There are three stages of oral consideration in each branch, which means that the law will be thoroughly considered, the full implications will be considered.
Right.
But to introduce something relatively quickly, and this often happens after a budget, doesn't it? You introduce an order, and then if it is deemed necessary to go down the primary legislation route, then that follows as swiftly as possible after the order.
And you've got the 12 months to reconfirm it, but then it has to receive royal assent within 24 months for it to all remain legitimate. So, and I think the issue really with this was doing the full bill that we're working on. Is going to take longer. It's not going to be completed by the 21st of November. So we did need this. We're basically needing to make it permanent. And then obviously, when the actual bill comes through, it'll just repeal that. So it's a very interesting process, but it is a very deliberative process. I mean, as you said, it goes through a lot of scrutiny, a lot of stages before it actually becomes law.
And of course, that's the difference between primary legislation and secondary legislation. Primary legislation tends, this is Acts of Tynwald in effect, that tends to be stuff that, it's in a much more permanent position in terms of law. Orders and regulations can be made usually thanks to powers given by primary legislation. Right. And they don't tend to have as much scrutiny. The primary legislation, as you're describing, has a lot more scrutiny, people have a chance to feed back then.
Well, this is it
because they hear that the process is ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, these types of things. When you bring it in as a bill, there are consultations, not necessarily all public ones, but certainly with key stakeholders and things. It gives them all the opportunity to at least have some input into that process, an act comes in and essentially it establishes a framework, and they're not often changed. I mean, it does happen obviously, but it's not something that happens on a weekly or even an annual basis. Whereas the orders and the regulations and things are much. The way we do it gives the legislative chambers far more flexibility on how they, and it gives them, they can react a bit faster, because taking an act through is quite a lengthy process, frustratingly so in some respects, but again, it's all part of a process that allows the time for scrutiny. And then the other thing, that it's a fairly recent introduction in LegCo, which I think is important and very, very useful. And we've used it fairly recently. We did on the Treasury Miscellaneous Provisions Bill, which I didn't introduce. I took that through clauses and the final reading was in early April, I think it was. And I think for the assisted dying and things, it essentially gives Legislative Council another opportunity to pause and bring in outsiders. It's an evidence
stage.
Session, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And that has proved very, very useful in the past, because it's just a way to get additional input. Members can call anybody they want, effectively, who has some valid input into the process.
We were talking before this interview started, and I think we both were lamenting the fact that things like question time seems to get an awful lot of media attention, but is a fairly lightweight affair when it comes to being writing a question and giving the answers, whereas law really does cement the rules and regulations by which we live our lives.
Yes.
So I suppose in relation to this bill, how do we make this sound exciting? What's in it for the Manx people in terms of this bill?
Increased receipts to the Treasury. I mean,
and that's a pretty
pretty fundamentally
positive,
that is what it is about. I mean, it's, and yes, the when you turn on the radio or the internet, essentially everything is about question time and some of it's important, and it's because it's a voice of the people. Most of those questions are coming from constituents and things, and they're asking valid questions. I question whether some of them shouldn't just be put in writing and things, but yeah, it is what it is. But the reality is that legislation is dry and boring, but it's the thing that matters most because it's what affects every man, woman, child, business, and everything on the island.
And possibly it's made boring because it is drawn out, you know, that you have three different stages in each of the branches.
Right.
By the time you've come to the final reading in the final sitting of LegCo in relation to a bill, there's very little left to say about it, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, it's the problem with legislation, it doesn't lend itself to sound bites and clickbait.
Mm. Yes.
So it doesn't drive a lot of advertising revenue, I suppose.
Well, note to legislative drafters then, try and make it a little bit more clickbaity so that...
No, that's you know, at least it's one of the few refuges from that sort of thing. But as I say, it is very important, and it's unfortunate that it doesn't, the actual way the sausage is made and the importance in the way that it is made doesn't get a lot more coverage and things, because it really does impact people's lives, and very, very few people understand how it works, or you know, or just how important it is.
And it takes quite a lot of time. I mean, in relation to this bill, it wouldn't have taken you long to read the bill and to understand the bill, because it's just two clauses.
Well, I had to go. I mean, that's one of the things I have found with coming into LegCo. You know, where perhaps difference in expectations is that, you know, I knew there was a lot of work and a lot of reading to do. I just hadn't realized how much reading, and it's not a lot of it is not just cursory glances at things. You have to, you know, you have to read in detail, in depth, and understand it. Because one of the problems I have is, and I know a couple of my colleagues in LegCo feel exactly the same way, we're not going to vote on something unless we actually understand what it is, what the implications are, and you know, what the other the alternatives are. So it requires a fair amount of detail. So yes, this particular bill that I'm bringing through was essentially two lines. There's nothing there. But I had to go back and look at the temporary taxation order that was brought through last year, which is a lot more detailed, and then going through the Hansard and the various other things to kind of understand why some of the changes were made or what some of the comments were things. So, you know, even though it's a two-line bill, it's not, it took me probably a week's worth of evenings of reading, various materials and things like that. And that was probably par for the course. But I think the other thing we were talking about before this interview started was, and I'm not very good at it at the moment because I'm still, you know, learning, finding my way around things. But at some point, for your own sanity, you have to work out what is important and what isn't in terms of the reading materials, because you can get absolutely buried in it. So you have to prioritize it and look at it. And the one thing that is very useful, and they're highly underrated, is the policy officers in the various departments. At least the one, I'm in Treasury, and we have several of them. And I'm very impressed with their level of understanding and detail when they're helping put together the legislation, things like that. So I have found it very useful, rather than trying to wade through and understand masses of technical documentation and things, is to just go to them and spend half an hour chatting with them. They can explain it in words of one syllable and less that I can understand, and then at least, if nothing else, it puts it into context, then it makes it much easier to understand. So, it works.
and it is, I mean, that is a really important thing about law. Anyone who's a lay person who's ever read an Act of Tynwald, mm-hmm. Will know that if you're hoping to just skim read an Act of Tynwald, you won't get very far. Yes. You might be okay with the introductory lines, the short title, the long title of the bill. They'll give you a clue as to what's in it, but the wording is such as to be clear to a lawyer, not necessarily clear to the layperson.
Correct.
And it does take some time to ensure that what you've written is actually what you want. I do recall bringing almost bringing a piece of legislation to Tynwald, and at the very last minute, I had read it a couple of times previous. I asked the policy officer, what exactly does this particular clause do? Because it appears to do the opposite of what we want. And sure enough, that's what it did. It did the very opposite of what we were planning to do because of a cut and paste error in the legislation. Right. And why, of course, you need to read it carefully.
The thing I find, and I think most people find difficult, is even if you can get your head around the jargon. I mean, I've been reading legal things and contracts and things for decades, so I'm familiar with the terminology and things like that. But the thing that is most complex for me is almost every act refers to other acts and other legislation. And, you know, I think it was in the Treasury Miscellaneous Provisions Bill that I brought through. I think there was even a reference to some Act from 1897 or something. Try to find some of that stuff. And then, you know, we've introduced this legislation, or we're in the process of introducing this legislation, and we've got these words in front of us, and they refer then to another piece of legislation that you then have to go and look at. And then you have to look at, well, does this repeal that? Does it contradict it? Does it, you know, does it supplement it? Or and so it's and the thing about it is it's time consuming. It's not something that you just sit down and over a cup of coffee you're looking at. I'll have a quick scan through this bill and things. You can't do that. It's exceedingly time consuming.
And the other thing I found with legislation is you had to. It wasn't the sort of thing you could do if you'd spent the whole day, maybe a 10-hour day, going from one meeting to another meeting without a break.
No.
And then at the end of the day, think that you might have time to read the bill. Your head needed to be pretty clear and well prepared to deal with quite challenging reading.
I think a lot of the briefing papers and things for the boards and things, I mostly do that in the evenings. But when I get down to the bills and legislation, I find first thing in the morning when I get up. Start over breakfast, and then while your mind's still clear and things like that.
Sadly, because... and this shows what a sad case I'd become. I tended to do my bills on a Sunday, because it was a day where I knew I wasn't going to get pestered by, civil servants and phone calls and all the like. So you had time; you could settle down and spend the day reading a 90-page
bill. That is the problem. It's when you get into that, you need uninterrupted time, and every time you get interrupted, you just lose your train of thought. And as I say, you're dealing with complex interrelationships between this piece of legislation and various other things, so it can get quite tricky. But as I say, it's interesting. Really interesting.
So then the other bill, the other bill you brought through, that had its final stage
it's gone for royal assent.
Again, going back to the point I said, what's in it for the Manx people? What changes that mean as a result of that bill?
The Tynwald Auditor General stuff basically got removed. There's still a little bit of stuff in there. But it brought two things forward. One is to do with the fee regulations. Now, one of the issues we face is the inordinate number of pieces of secondary legislation and regulations and various things that come through to keys and things and need approval. When especially those ones that come through on an annual basis or regularly, because we're going up by we're increasing fees by CPI or various other things. So that part of it was to streamline the process. So that actually helps the government. It makes everything a little bit more efficient, because again, my view is that Keys, LegCo, Tynwald, we should all be focusing a lot more effort on the really important stuff. Rather than
and in a way having to bring separate fees orders through, which is effectively what this replaced.
Yes.
I mean, some would argue that that means that there's less transparency, which inarguably is true. Mm-hmm. But having been a minister in two different departments that had several fees orders.
Yes.
It did at certain times, particularly as DOI minister, it felt like death by a thousand cuts because every other month there was a new fees order coming through, and every time the argument would be opened up again as to, well, why are we charging fees for these people on this, and why are we doing that, and why are we doing the other, and in essence, it was stuff that had been pretty much agreed at budget time that there would be an increase in all the fees in line with inflation, and then it takes time for the secondary legislation to catch
up. And that is that's true. It's, some of it comes through in the budget, and then there's others where there may be discussions, but it never gets pushed back. And things, I mean, there are obviously clearly some that will be controversial and things, but an awful lot of them are tied to cost, the CPI index or inflation or whatever, and they're going to pass. So this makes it doesn't stop any MHK or even MLC from raising an objection or introducing a motion to change that for that particular thing. So the mechanisms are still there. So that was the fee orders was the one part, but the other one was that was again it became the kitchen sink bill was a DHA thing, which was to do with the fire brigade, the fees for the fire brigade. So essentially, the fire brigade has run the way it runs, and there have been occasions where it has charged people for false call outs or for various other things. But I don't think it was ever there was no specific legislative basis for some of it, or it was unclear at things. And what this does was primarily regularize it. Hmm. It did because there was some concern about false alarms in your house and various things like that. All of that is excluded. Essentially, there's no changes whatsoever to domestic properties. This is primarily for commercial properties and things like that, where they didn't take care of their fire alarms and they kept going off, and the fire department had to attend for things. So it gives them the power to assess fees to recover the costs if they need to. I don't think whether they use it or not becomes, I suppose, entirely up to them, and various things like that. So again, it was just streamlining things more. And it seems there's a fair amount of legislation that comes through that essentially regularizes what has been practice anyway, which is good. I mean, it needs to have a sound basis. So those were the two things. But when I inherited that bill, the controversial part, the difficult part, was the whole Tynwald general stuff that had been wrapped in there when it hadn't actually been through. It hadn't been laid before Tynwald, and it was complex and things. So that, all the work was done outside of the chamber in terms of negotiating and various other things. So essentially, what's happened is, the report will be laid. The Tynwald Auditor General report will be laid before Tynwald in July, and then based on that, Treasury already has a draft audit bill, which will then take what Tynwald approves of those recommendations and things and codify them into the bill. It will come forward and we'll introduce it. The hope is we can get a long way through that this year still.
And much of that legislation, or some of that legislation, was in this miscellaneous provisions.
Correct.
But that's been taken out.
It was taken out, but one of the key pieces of that was we had the evidence session, and we had the Tynwald General himself there, and one of the concerns was whether or not without these clauses in this bill he could actually undertake his responsibilities, that he wasn't being hindered from things. And essentially what it turned out to be was that there were some inconveniences, but that he was still able to fulfill his functions. So that sort of, to some extent, took the pressure off. If he said, I can't do my job because these things, then we would have had to work something out to make sure he could. But he did. He was content that he was able to do his job. It was some parts were inconvenient, but it didn't. It wasn't prohibiting things. So essentially, I think we got a good solution, and we'll have a much better outcome, and we'll be based upon what Tynwald actually wants.
And of course, it's usually better to follow, or for legislation to follow policy.
Yes.
And in essence, what would have been happening was you'd have introduced the law and then agreed the policy afterwards.
Yes, there was some disquiet about that in certain quarters,
which you can well imagine. Well, unfortunately, I think we're almost out of the out of time. So just a very quick, maybe 20-second answer. How have you found LegCo? Is it everything you expected, or different?
It's different. I hadn't realised. Is the one thing I found, it's very collegiate. I mean, we have a lot of discussions in our office area, and you know, I think we all want the same thing. We work together far better than I thought we would. There are differences of opinion on everything, which is healthy, but there's that. It's that, and it's busy. There's a lot of work, and unfortunately, what the public sees, you know, they see the sittings, and they see that you've been. For example, we only sat for like 5 minutes on doing the introduction of this bill. But there's hours and hours and hours of work that goes on behind the scenes. All the real work goes on behind the scenes. But anyway, it's great learning experience.
Tynwald members, and particularly MLCs, come in for a lot of stick, often justifiably, but their role in making good laws is a vital one. I'm Phil Gawne. Goramayo. Thanks for listening.